A massive heartfelt thank you to this week's superstar homies who have donated to keep this podcast going. So thank you to Leah Bug, Anna Morningstar, Sylvia Shortall, Stephanie Katz, Lisa Paul, Hannah Vasicek, and Andrew from Tennessee. Not many people realize just how much money goes into running a podcast. There's editing costs, hosting fees, software licensing fees, VA costs, and that doesn't even include my time in researching my guests and interviewing them, which takes me away from my consulting income. So if you found value from this podcast, please, please, please consider donating to keep the show going. Every little bit helps, and every donation over $10 will receive a shout out on the show. So to donate, visit www.eugeniekruger.com and click the donate button at the top. So let me tell you a little bit about today's episode. It is the fifth Chinwag episode with Marcus Fernandez, the principal of the Center for Homeopathic Education, or CHE. I have been doing my professional development through CHE for the past 5 years continuously, and I really credit them for my clinic being as successful as it is due to the absolutely incredible teaching staff that they have. So every now and again, when Marcus and my busy schedules happen to have a spare moment that collides, we like to catch up and have a chat about random stuff with thousands of you listening in on our chatter. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but apparently you find it interesting. So we'll just continue doing it until you find us boring. So if you'd like to listen back on our previous four episodes, just type Chinwag in the search field of the app you're using to listen to this podcast. So in this episode, I share some private information that I've never shared on the podcast before and which only a handful of people very close to me know about. I was really in two minds about sharing this, but my challenge this year for myself is to be brave so I can inspire others to be brave as well. So let me know what you think. Also in today's episode, we are chatting about the Healy device, which I am completely new to. I've learned about this many years ago, like probably about 4 years ago, I remember a client of mine telling about it. And I am finally going to give this a go myself because I can't really give my opinion on something that I don't know anything about. So I have received my device. And if it's something that you're interested in learning about, please email info@eugeniekruger.com and I can give you my referral link. Totally upfront, it is a network marketing business. Like I said, I am completely new to this. I don't even know how it works yet, but I have just signed up. I don't even know where to find my referral link. So I'm hoping that by the time you've emailed me that I have figured that part out. But yeah, I'm going to give this device a go on myself and my family and we'll just see where it ends up. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you do, or even if you don't, be sure to tell me all about it in our Facebook group called Homeopathy Hangout Podcast. We'd love to have you there. Enjoy the episode. Let's just go.
The Joe Rogan is Gator Arm, which are really good. And the mic's good.
I need a new mic and I need a new boom arm. Minus. And also just for our listeners that are listening on Zoom or Rumble, is the reason that I have mine blurred is that I've got mattress toppers on the back of my walls.
Oh, that looks good. It looks like a studio.
Yeah, it is really cool. It is like a little studio. We've got a pair of drums here, Marcus. You'd appreciate that.
Oh, yeah.
Got some drums set here.
A bit of rock and roll.
But just for those people watching on Zoom and Rumble, I think this makes your eyes go a little bit funny, so I'll just blur it so we don't get...
No, it's good. Leave it. It looks natural. It looks more natural. I hate it when it does that. It's sort of like it looks annoying.
But it's just like if you actually look at it, your eyes do go a bit.
No, it's fine. It's like it's looking at a studio. It's like a studio wall where that's what it is, isn't it? Isn't it?
Soundproof. We've got like a little windy house there in the back. It's like a sauna because, like I said, it's 40 degrees here today. And then inside this little room, it is just so hot. When we bought this place, it had this weird little windy house just down at the bottom of the farm. I don't know why, what the people did with it there, but then I said to my husband, I'd love to have it up by the house and be able to record with it. And he got somebody to put it on the back of a truck and just bring it up the top of the house here, connect the internet, so I'm hardwired in here. And
But it's your place.
Should we introduce ourselves? We haven't had a chin wag in such a long time. People might forget who we are. It's been a long time, isn't it?
We've got a lot to talk about. Long, long time. Yeah. Quickly time goes, though.
It does. We've got the lovely Marcus Fernandez here from the Center for Homeopathic Education. Welcome back, Marcus. We've had lots of requests for some more chin wags.
Hey, yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me back. It's good to be back. And we all seem to start talking before we press record. I think we should just press record the moment we get on because we start chatting. We can't help it.
We should. And we have got nothing, literally nothing prepared. I just ran in here from unpacking the groceries and everything else. So we've got nothing prepared. So this is going to be fun because we'll just see where this goes, right? But how was your holidays and what's been, and talk to me about, definitely about Colin Griffith's Master Practitioner course. You've already had a couple of lessons. Well, there's
Yeah,
one, I
well
think,
that
tonight, hey?
no, it was last night. Yeah, it was last
Last
night.
night.
It's great. It's been proved so popular. And I've known Colin a long, long time, and I've been for the past 3.5 years trying to get him to do a course because he's got so much wisdom, so much clinical experience, so much depth of understanding. And I kept asking him, "Come on, Colin, you've got to do a course. We've got to do a year course. Let's do a course where really," and I said this a lot about your legacy, because it's when you have that such long history as a practitioner, all that clinical experience, all that people experience, then it's really about, we have to now share it, you know, and because once it's gone, it's gone. I mean, he has written, I think, 4 books now, all great, the books, always so much information and wisdom. But actually, to do something live and to do something where in a group of people, and we do this all online. This is all online, all online live. And we have people joining from all different parts of the world, people getting up in the middle of the night to do this. Because I think there's something about, I always believe homeopathy is a verbal, it's like an oral tradition. So we can read the books and we can read all that sort of, but actually it gets brought alive, I feel, through teaching. And I still remember lectures when I was in my first year, you know, where I just get blown away by homeopathy and what it can do. And I think when you have somebody like Colin teaching you, even though it was incredibly humble, there's a lot of humility with Colin, to be on a session where, like last night, you could ask him any question about what are you learning, but also about homeopathy and cases and just getting his insight. And that's invaluable. That really is incredibly invaluable. And he's never going to do this again. These, like we did it with Hillary in the way we did it last year, Hillary Dorian, it's like a legacy. It's leaving behind. So I always ask people like Colin or whoever get in to do these, what we call master practitioner programs, is this is your legacy. If this was your opportunity to share your knowledge and wisdom to the world, what would it be? And this is really what the course is about. And it's called The Anatomy of Energy in Homeopathy. And just going through all the different chakra systems and but it's also about putting the patient, the client, at the center of it. Colin, in his very first lecture, talked about this, where a lot of time we learn remedies, we learn methodologies, but actually sometimes we're not listening to what the person in front of us is saying. And I always say, you can't listen and think at the same time. To truly be present with somebody in a consultation or any interaction, but particularly in a therapeutic space, that space in between is so crucial. And that, to me, where the healing begins. Because sometimes we have, and you know this, Eugenie, as a practitioner, sometimes we have people who come to see us and they've never shared these, you know, their life story in that way, or things that have happened in their life. But it's about creating that space. And I think the difference between a good practitioner and a great practitioner is that ability to create that space in between. That's where the magic happens, I think. So,
Absolutely. So you've just had Colin's course. Sorry, I've got the two dogs here under. I think she's playing with a ball. I've got
that's all right.
you've got Colin's course has started, and then you had a new intake of new students as well in January. So you've had a really busy time. I've always been too like scared to ask you, "Hey Marcus, can we have another chin wag?" If people are
No,
asking.
yeah, it's it,
But
yeah.
and what were
Well,
the
I'm.
enrollments been like? I'd love to
Yeah,
hear.
it's
I'm
been
so
great. Yeah. Well, we're getting a lot of people from Australia, so there's definitely, I think, your influence and Sarah's influence in Australia. But yeah, it's been great. It's a busy time. In January is a busy time, and yeah, we've had a great recruitment on our fast track course, on our 2-year fast track, on our 4-year part time course, and on our foundation course. And yeah, it's been a really, really busy January. But it's great. It's about more people want to study homeopathy. As we know, the demand for homeopathy is going through the roof. So we need practitioners to be able to serve people, because The heat world needs healing more than ever right now. The whole world needs homeopathy. And what I love about it is that having students from all over the world, we've got students, and that's, and even though people come from different backgrounds, different cultures, they all come together because of their love and passion for the subject. And that's what I find amazing. And I find amazing that with technology, which has got its pros and its cons, as we know, can now reach. I mean, I've been doing CHE now, founded it 26 years ago, going from a classroom, just a classroom-based model, which is obviously fine, it's good and works, and we still have that here in London. But then to be able to reach people who don't have access. We're very lucky in the UK, incredibly lucky in the UK, the access we have to homeopathy and to the history here in the UK. But a lot of other countries don't have that, really don't have that. We don't have access to great teachers and things. So to be able to take it out into the world has been an amazing thing. And I just feel very blessed that we're able to do that. And it's not all on me. I'm just going to have to give that a shout out to the CHE team. We have a great team here behind the scenes and in the front, but also behind the scenes, that CHE wouldn't be what it is today. Because we have a lot going on with CHE Pro, the postgraduate membership. Like I said, these master practitioner programs, the actual practitioner training courses, there's a lot going on. Yeah, it's not just down to me. It's the great CHE team we've got, who are extremely dedicated to what we're trying to do. Because what our vision at CHE is to enhance the health and well-being of humankind through the education of homeopathy. And that we all, that's our North Star. That's what guides us.
I have three or four things that I want to say about that. The first is there was another college that's just told me that they've had their biggest amount of homeopathic enrollments ever as well. The second thing was that I do think it's so important when you have to have lecturers. There are some colleges where the content is mostly just reading and they might send you off to go watch like a couple of videos here or there, but it's not the lecturers that's actually lecturing. And so I do wonder about that. I think only time will tell what the practitioners are like that do those types of courses. The other thing that what you were saying is I wanted to ask you about the party, because didn't you have a 25th party? You were just saying you've been in there 26 years, but I felt like we haven't chatted in such a long time. I have a feeling, didn't you say you were going to have like a 25th party at the end of last year?
Yeah, this year.
This year.
We're 25 years last year. We're just so busy. We're going to do it this year. We're going to have some kind of celebration and get together. But back to that point you just said then about learning, I think that's what I said in the beginning, you need teachers to bring it alive. And so much goes on. I mean, like in our tutorials, I do a lot of our tutorials as well. There's a lot of nuances to homeopathy, and it's very, I always say you become a homeopath. It's not just like learning facts, and even though you will learn facts, it's much more of a way of thinking. And we very much slip into an allopathic way of thinking because that's how we've been brought up. And the reminder is bringing people back to say, no, this is homeopathy. It is different. You're not dealing with material doses. Our concept of the vital force in homeopathy, just like prana in Ayurveda or qi in Chinese medicine, that's what we're following. We're following the body's innate intelligence. And, you know, down to dosages and down to potency, we have to throw off this allopathic way of thinking because we're not dealing with material doses. And also the fact we have to keep it simple. I said this in a tutorial this week. At the end of the first year, I always say to students, go back and go and read A Beginner's Guide to Homeopathy again. I say that to the second years every year. I say that to our third years every year and our fourth year. Go back and reread it, because what happens is we go into it and we can learn so much that we go into analysis paralysis. And we've got to keep it simple. Homeopathy is simple. Everybody listening, I'm telling you, homeopathy is simple. It's based on some very basic principles which don't change. The law of similars. Like cures like. That is what homeopathy is. You chop an onion up, your eyes water, your nose runs. Well, we use onion in a diluted amount for people with similar symptoms, like with hay fever or coughs or colds. That's homeopathy. That's what we're doing. We're matching states to the remedy. A bit like game of snap. I always say it's like a game of snap. But I can't tell you, Eugene, how many people forget that. I do with these home prescriber videos. I do the, you know, live sessions. And the amount of homeopaths that are on these. And I always thought, why are homeopaths attending? And often they say, because I need to remind myself of the basics. I need to remind myself of the simplicity. Yeah, it's really cool. It's really important. That was a very long-winded answer to
what you... No, well, it's about to get more long-winded, because there's another part of that question, something you said about, anyway, homeopaths. was I wanted to just ask you this story about the plane crash, because I think we had this conversation just like on an offline at some stage, but I don't think we've actually talked about that on the podcast, but I'm sure at one stage I said I want you to actually tell us the story of what happened.
I don't know in great detail, but actually there was a program on our Channel 4 here in the UK a couple of years ago about it as well. So basically, it was all the doctors at the homeopathic hospital. So people are not aware, but there was many homeopathic hospitals here in the UK. But the one particularly was the London Homeopathic Hospital on Great Ormond Street, Queen Square, which actually we ran our full-time course there for many years. It was great to run it from there because of the history of people like, oh, there's so many great homeopaths had been there and taught there. And they still had the original library, this wooden library where tutorials used to go on, like people like Fu Bister, and I'm trying to remember the other lady,
Marjorie
Magic of the
Blackie.
Minimum. Yeah,
Marjorie Blackie.
Margaret Blackie. Yeah, she used tutorials there in the library. Also, Magic of the Minimum Dose lady, Dorothy Shepherd.
Yes.
Dorothy Shepherd, yeah. But many, I mean, there's so many great homeopaths there. Fu Bister, who did carcinosin. So the history there was incredible. But what happened, but it's not like it was. I mean, there's a very, it's probably even less so now, amount of homeopathy that goes on there. Over the years, it's slowly been taken over by the National Health Service and just allopathic medicine in there. And so what happened was there was a lot of leading lights. You remember homeopathy's background, well, particularly in the UK and probably the US, it was very much coming from the allopathic doctors. They're the ones that use homeopathy, and there wasn't many what we call lay practitioners or professional homeopaths. Many were doctors. And so what happened was there's so many leading lights there at the homeopathic hospital because a lot of trainings went. People came from all parts of the world to train there. And they were going to a conference, I think it was in Belgium. Listen, anybody listening, if I'm getting some of these facts wrong, it's just a brief overview. But I think they were going to Belgium and the plane took off, I think from Heathrow, and then crashed into a place called Staines. And a whole generation of homeopathic doctors were wiped out in that plane crash. So this is sort of like, I think, the early 70s. It was the early 70s. And that was devastating for homeopathy. That sort of stopped it in its tracks. And it, if it wasn't for the two groups, because remember, homeopathy has always been, the Druids kept it going as well through the sort of 40s, 50s, 60s. And there were two Druids who used to run classes in London. This was probably 1974, 75, after this crash. John DeMonte was one of them. And God, the guy, I'm trying to remind you, what's
Martin
his name?
Miles.
No. Martin came to the class. Tony Hurley came to the class. Misha Norlin came to these classes. Robert Davidson came to the classes. So basically, these two classes, one was North London, one was South London, and they kept homeopathy going. But all those people that attended ended up starting the first colleges. Like people like Misha Norlin, Robert Davidson, Martin Miles, they set up the Society of Homeopaths and the College of Homeopathy, which we took over, College of Homeopathy, in 2002. So there was it wasn't for them. And really, what the profession, the lay homeopaths, professional homeopaths, really then that was the resurgence. And really is the most people who practice homeopathy in the UK, homeopaths, are professional homeopaths. They're not medical homeopaths. It was almost like turned around, but they kept it going. Thank goodness they did. But look at those leading lights that came out of that. It's incredible. And then the 80s just exploded.
Yeah, I just wanted you to share that story because I don't think many people know about that. But also, it's interesting. This feels to me like the last couple of years, I've had a lot of homeopathic greats that have passed on. I don't know why it feels that way. Maybe it's just coincidental that there's a lot of them that are quite a bit older now, but we've had so many greats. I actually just had a chat with one of my staff today saying there were a couple of people that I really wanted to interview, only to find out that they've just passed away. I mean, Peter Chappell just recently,
Yeah,
I was really
Pete
hoping I would
Chappell.
get him on. And I was so sad to hear of his passing this year. And
That's right.
yes.
Yeah. Well, I think, people do pass on. I mean, a lot of
But they're not allowed to, not the
homeopaths don't live forever. We haven't got the
homeopaths.
philosopher's stone that's alive. Yeah, people, well, they do. And like I said, a lot of now that generation are elderly. It's that every generation needs a new generation coming through. It's We had the track. I always think it's like rock and roll, isn't it? It's like all the Rolling Stones still going in there, but or the beat. But there has to be a new generation coming through, and that's really what we're about and CHE about is helping that new generation come forward and with the inspiration. Back to what I said about the Master Practitioner Program, it's the same thing, getting these people to leave their legacies, because it's the legacy that is important, leaving behind for the next generation coming through, who are going to have different challenges. Just look at what, look what's happened the past 4 years with COVID and the whole that whole thing and the vaccination. These effects are going to be felt for a generation. Mm. I'm middle-aged now. I was a young 20-year-old, so you know me, obviously now I'm middle-aged. It all creeps up on us when we least expect it, doesn't it? But it's important to pass that knowledge on.
So I've just recently found out that I saw in one of our professional homeopaths Facebook groups that Dr. Will Taylor is putting together his life work as well on Substack. Yeah. And you can have a monthly or a yearly subscription to access this information. And his whole reason behind it is that he wants to pass on all this knowledge, which I think it's wonderful. Yeah. We can learn so much from these homeopaths that have practiced for 30, 40, 50 years. Exactly. A lot to be gained from that for sure. So it's nice.
I think so. Yeah, I think it's nice to see. And I think it's good that, you know, as a profession, we need to be thinking of it like this, because once it's gone, it's gone. And there's so much technology now that there's technology where you can, especially with AI, where you can actually still have that person. If you got, about a minute clip of the video, you can recreate them and ask them questions. And so it's very interesting how things are going, whether or not you like it or not. It's a little bit spooky, but it is quite incredible. But
it's quite incredible. I'm quite excited because just recently they have installed AI software on my podcasting platform. So now when upload it, that's like a few hundred a year, but you upload it and the audio quality is so good. So good. It sounds like you're in a studio, which is great because some of the guests, they don't have a microphone and they're just using their laptop's audio. And so it really makes such a huge difference, and it automatically takes out all the ums and the ahs and the spaces, and creates this awesome studio sound. So really makes a huge
difference. Everything was what we said before about technology, there's pros and cons. And I think the future will be wearables, which we've got wearables that track things and like our heart rate variability or our sleep and different things. But I really think it will be about wearables that actually give you the remedy. And I know there's things you can do that already, but I think it's going to go to a whole different level.
Has Lisa Strebeck been talking to you about Healy's?
Yeah. But again, the Healy, I know about Healy, but it's still quite clunky. You want something like a ring that is something very subtle. And I geek out a lot of this stuff. I'm a bit of a secret biohacker where, look at this, I've just got this recently. This is a hydrogen.
I've heard of them. Yeah. My coffee lady is trying to sell me one of those. They're about, hers is selling for $800 Australian though. I don't know. I'm always trying to take it back to nature and what's.
Totally. But it's also good to hack into the, you're right, because there's a lot of things you can do in nature, can't you? There's grounding is important in the morning, going out on the earth.
You look at somebody like Vader Austin, and maybe you just need to put your water bottle onto like a flower of life, a sacred geometric selenite stone, which is what I do at work. Or maybe you just need to write love or whatever and tape it to the water. I have great conversations with my clinic manager, Amy, about this because, you know, we've got a 40-minute drive into work when we carpool together sometimes. And this is the type of stuff that we just nutted out, like with the hydrogen water thing especially. So it's interesting to see you have it as well. I'm happy for everyone.
I like to test things, like everything. I go, oh, that's interesting. I look at the evidence, like, okay, I'm going to test it and see, does it make a difference? Do I feel better? You don't have to get a bottle like that. You can get a little tap. There's all things you can
now,
do.
Is your bottle network marketing company though?
No.
I don't have anything against as such, because I was actually part of a network marketing company from 1998 for 16 years, and they rebranded to Monet, which now everyone's selling, and I kind of wish I stayed in it, but they reformulated the shampoo and it just wasn't the same as when it was New Ways. But you know, that's the thing that kind of puts me off with the Healy as well. But then I think network marketing's not really a bad thing, because instead of spending that money on advertising, you're actually just paying people for word of mouth, which is what we all do naturally anyway. And I guess, and then I bring it back to my affiliate program, which really is no different, because if, you know, people can sign up for the affiliate programs through my website and then they get 5% of whatever, their friend gets 5% discount. And
which I think is great.
It's just energy exchange, really, right? Because you would normally recommend it anyway, and now you're just getting energy back in the form of finances, which I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But
I think that's fine. I think what happens is with a lot of the network marketing, you've got to go then through a distributor and all those things. Say you want to buy something. I just want to buy it. If I want it, I want it now. I don't want to happen to go and speak to a distributor. No. So that's only my negative thing with it. But there's so many good things that you can get through it. I think it's just, I think, yeah, I just think it's probably had a bit of a bad press. But yeah, but it's good to, I think it's good to try things. I still think it's good to try things. And
have you tried, have you used a Healy yet? Have you tried it?
I haven't used a Healy, but I know about it.
Yeah, I've been thinking.
Yeah, I can't make anything with it.
Yeah, no, I can't either. I'm hearing really interesting things, and kudos to the lovely Lisa Strebeck. She's got her own podcast
Lisa's great.
Called Raw Health Rebel, and we've become really good friends over the last couple of years through the podcasting and stuff.
Yeah,
we're actually just messaging back.
One of our graduates.
I know, exactly. So, and she's good friends with Hillary's daughter as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, trained together. They trained and they're in the same class. Yeah.
I think she's become like the Healy homeopath, because I know Caroline Gaskin is now also in her group, and Janie Lavelle, all these homeopaths, including myself, actually, I've got one through Lisa as well. And I'm just, I haven't used it yet because I've been so busy. I only got it a week ago, but it's sitting there and I'm tempted to use it.
I think it's like
I'm intrigued.
It's like,
you got to try it.
If it works, it works. Yeah, I mean, then Dave, it works, it works. And I think as homeopaths, I've been doing them a disservice, but seem to be 15 years behind technology. But I think we need to embrace it. But I think it's having a mixture. I still like my remedies and my little bottles and my little things, and as well as things that are technologically just like remedy machines and all these things. I think we've got to be open to it. We can't just sit and pretend these things aren't happening, because we've got a generation of younger people coming through, and all they've ever known is technology, and they think differently and they see things differently. We've also got to adapt. As we know, health is our ability to adapt to our environment. So I think we have to adapt and try new things.
I've realized I'm actually a closet skeptic, because even homeopathic things, I'm so skeptical. And sometimes I'll take a remedy, I'm like, there's no way that's going to work. And it works. And I'm still surprised. But with the radionics machines, it's taken me a long time to get on board with that. And we got one last year and we've been using it in the clinic. And I've been giving remedies to a couple of my clients and they've had really good results. And some of them I've told them it was a radionics remedy, and other ones I didn't. And I said, look, I'm just going to give you this remedy free of charge. I want you to test it out for me and see what you found. And yeah, there was only of those, there was one client that definitely had no results. I gave it was for ear infection. And because it was, so intense, I was like, okay, this is either going to work really well or not at all. And I gave her the radionics remedy, and I gave her Mercaviv, and I gave the radionics remedy in a, I think, 200C, and I gave her the actual succussed remedy in a 30C. And I said to her, just start off with a 200C, the radionics remedy, because I prefer you start off with a higher potency. Use several doses throughout the day, no change. And then the next day she switched to the 30C and had instant improvement. So you can kind of go,
I used one for 7 years. I used one for 7 years when I first started practicing, and because it was cheaper to use a machine at the time when I first started out. And I can definitely say, hand and heart, it definitely works. No question about it. I know these are things I've done, hospital visits and people were quite poorly in many situations.
I just want to give a positive story as well, so I don't sound too skeptic, that I had really well on APIS, 1M after the succussed, and then she needed higher remedies and we couldn't find it. And so we did it on the machine and she had even better results. So I have had really good results with it as well. Didn't want to sound too skeptical.
No. But you have to be skeptical. Yeah, I think you have to say, does this work or not? I use pharmacy remedies now, but that's no disrespect to the machine. It's just how I felt. But I remember, I've told you this story before, but what we used to do when we were at college, when we were training, we bought a remedy machine in the class. So we all put money together and there was about 30 of us and we bought a remedy machine. And then we used to take turns having the machine every week, once a week, taking turns. And then what we would do is make up a lot of stock remedies. So this is a way to build your pharmacy. And so that's what we did. So I had a lot of, I made up with Saclac and I made them up. Then fast forward sort of, I don't know how many years later, many years later, probably 10 years later, I had flu, but it was like a Rust Tox type flu. Felt stiff. And anyway, it was a Rust Tox flu. So I didn't have any, or the only Rust Tox I had was a machine made remedy. And it was a 30. And I thought, oh, it's on a radiance machine. Because people would say, oh, they're not as strong as pharmacy remedies and all this. They're a lot weaker. And I thought, oh, okay, I better take more of it than normal, because it's a machine made. It's been over 10 years. So I kept popping it like every half an hour or something. And after a few hours, I came out with an itchy, like blistery rash on my hands and my feet. I thought, oh my goodness, what's happening? I'm getting worse. And I suddenly thought, hang on a minute, this is Russ Tox. I'm proving it. So I stopped and it all cleared up. So that was a big lesson about machine-made remedies. I don't believe they are weaker. There's an example of that. Now it's one example. They work. They definitely work. I just think it depends whether or not you want to use them. And like you said, great for copying things across. If people have never been well since a particular medication, you can copy across. You can make any potency, any remedy. So they are very flexible in that respect, I think.
Yeah, they're really good. I have to say, we do put a lot of intention in when we make ours as well. So when we go to make it, we always print the label first of the remedy and the potency, and we put it on the bottle. And then we'll zero everything out on the machine and we'll set that intention. We'll set the remedy there and then do it all. And then, so there's like a little ritual that goes with it. It probably makes absolutely no difference at all. And like, I always think that the reality is that we probably don't even need machines. If you look at Vedaa Austin's work, you could probably just write the remedy on a piece of paper and you can actually even, and this is true story. So Eileen Noman is a homeopath, medical astrologer, shaman, written 250 books, sold 23 million copies, just the most unbelievable woman who I'm doing this podcast series with at the moment.
Yeah.
We've recorded four episodes, recording a fifth one tomorrow. But before we start recording, she sent me a remedy psychically and it made a huge difference. And I am really skeptical. So this was definitely no placebo because I was not expecting it to work at all, but the difference I could feel was incredible. And yeah, we probably don't even need the machines. We don't even need
back
the
to what we back to what we said before at the beginning, that actually we got to stop thinking of it allopathically. So you're dealing with remedies that have got no material dosing. We're in a different realm now, whether you want to call that quantum physics, quantum mechanics, who knows? We don't know. It's definitely not in the realm of chemistry, because it's beyond that. And if you look at the work of, what's he called, the guy who, sorry, my brain's a bit slow this morning. Bruce Lipton, no, he's great. I'm trying to get him on a podcast. He just got back to me.
Yeah, I'm trying to as well. So if you get him on, please let me look. Emoto?
No, Moto, he's great. Moto, but his work, anybody listening, if you've ever seen his work, I think Messages in Water.
Yeah, Hidden Messages
did those experiments
in Water.
Didn't he? Yeah, fantastic. And we actually do that at home. We actually, on the bottom of our water filter, we've got love, and we've taped it to the bottom of the water. Definitely, well, if you look at his experiments, it definitely changes the structure of water.
I always like this game of like, who are you talking about? And my husband gets annoyed at me because he's he's like trying to think, and then I guess all these things, and he gets angry at me because I guess wrong. But what does the person do that you're trying to think of?
Oh, sorry, he's the discoverer of the HIV virus. Luc Montagnier, that's right. So he carried on the work from Jack Benaviste around the memory of water. But if it's on YouTube, actually, that the film, I think it's 2012, about all the experiments he did. Have you seen it, Eugenie? They send the remedy through on the internet, and it's all double blinded. It's incredible. It's like what I was saying about wearables. It's that the future, I don't think, is little white pills or drops. It's going to be wearables. And we'll send our remedies maybe that way. And we're not working on the material plane. I think that's really important to get. And you're right, intention, all these things, it's very powerful.
Could you hear that advert that just came up before?
No.
I wasn't sure. Okay, no, that's fine. It must have just gone through the laptop because I was just on YouTube trying to find it, but it looks like it's Water Memory. It's a 2014 documentary about Nobel Prize laureate Luc Montagnier.
That's right.
And it's had 2.4 million views, hey?
Yeah.
Really cool. So if you just type in Luc Montagnier and...
Also look at, it was a conference I went to in 2019, I think, at the Royal Society of Medicine, where they had a Dr. Joel Pollack, who wrote The Fourth Phase of Water. Luc Montagnier also did a presentation. There was also Brian Josephson, who won the Nobel Prize for Physics, and all these different experiments that these scientists had done about water. And it's almost like they came up with a mechanism of how homeopathy works. So again, all that is on YouTube. I think it's called...
There's Homeopathy, New Evidence, Fourth Phase
that's
of Water.
Right.
There's an hour and a half one. And then there's another TED Talk,
there's
actually,
lots
that
and
he
lots
did.
Of videos.
So,
Really but if you
cool.
look at, if you check out those Science and New for Homeopathy, there's lots of the scientists. Some of it's quite highbrow science. But again, it was amazing to have that at the Royal Society of Medicine. And it was packed. And it was amazing. If you have chance to watch it, anybody listening, do watch the conference. because it is incredible. If you want to see proof of homeopathy, there it is.
Amazing. And what did you say? The Royal Conference?
It was the Royal Society of Medicine. Yeah, it's the Royal Society of Medicine.
Conference.
Yeah,
okay.
In London.
It looks like it was 2018 from that YouTube
yeah,
clip.
Yeah, probably 2018. I've lost all track of time. Before it's like before COVID, after.
Yeah, exactly. Lockdown. It's BC and before children and after children.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely that one, before kids. Yeah, after.
Yeah, actually, this is, how much time have you got, Marcus?
Yeah, fine.
Okay, because I've like skirted around this in episodes, but it'd be good to go like a little bit of a deep dive more into the how important an abundance mindset is in homeopathy. And it was brought home this year by, and I have to be careful how I say this, there is a homeopath who has a specific protocol, which has been around for maybe 15 or 20 years, which most homeopaths around the world use this particular protocol in their prescribing. And another homeopath was teaching this protocol and acknowledging this homeopath. And it turned really, really nasty of just people childishly calling each other horrible names. And just, it was like a bunch of trolls. It was actually disgusting. And I was so appalled that homeopaths can call each other these names online. Anyway, and it got me banned out of a couple of groups for standing up and saying something that we shouldn't be talking to each other that way, but that's okay too. What it brought up for me is that this particular homeopath's protocol is based on the work of somebody else.
Right.
But when, okay, so this is the protocol that this person has developed, which is based on the work of somebody else. Then a totally different homeopath has gone to teach this second homeopath's protocol, which is based on the work of somebody else, and acknowledged that homeopath.
Yeah.
So the person was
which one, the second homeopath?
Yeah, the second one.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm just making sure I'm following this.
This person was acknowledged throughout all of this teaching and said, thank you so much for this great work. But then the third homeopath who was teaching the second homeopath's protocol made a lot of money from doing this and became quite well known. And so I think there was maybe a little bit of a jealousy, a little bit of, oh, it's mine, my precious.
Yeah.
And so things got really nasty and lawyers were involved. None of this is any of my business. I'm just standing here observing all of this and going, all of our work is based on the work of somebody else with homeopathy.
Always.
So actually, Lisa Strebeck, again, in this professional homeopaths Facebook group that we have, just yesterday actually said, who can I credit for the pregnancy tissue salt protocol? And then somebody in there said, it's DeMonte that actually created this pregnancy tissue
John DeMonte,
salt
who we were talking,
protocol.
John DeMonte, we were talking about before.
Exactly. Now, many of us, I know many homeopaths who sell this pregnancy protocol, including myself. So we can put this together, we can sell it, and we can make money from it. And none of us are giving any royalties. I know DeMonte's passed, but none of us are giving any royalties to any of that. Many of us use the Banerjee protocols, and we are not giving them any acknowledgement of that. There is Andreas Tilch, who created the Strep Tilch remedy, which Helios is selling, and he's not getting any kickback from that. There is Paul, oh my gosh, I just struck a blank. Terrio.
Hirschke?
Terrio, who's created, there's so many homeopaths, right? Let's created such incredible remedies. Just Colin Griffith's Proving Group, all the new remedies that they've made that's available through the Power Pharmacies that all of us can copy and all of us can sell and all of us make money from. So I even went through this myself. Sorry, this is very long-winded. I'm coming to a point. Just stick with me for a little bit, okay? So
I've
actually created about 100 combination remedies, which there's so much. I can't tell you how much time and effort went into all of this. So just reading through all the Materia Medica, going through my repertory, looking at my old naturopathic manuals and looking at which herbs are great for this condition and then giving that in homeopathic potency and seeing what other combinations are out there and creating my own. And this tiny little bit of scarcity mentality in me goes every now and again, oh, what if other homeopaths go in there and they copy my combinations and they make money from it? And I've just realized homeopathy is the ultimate medicine or the ultimate career where you need to just have a total abundance mindset, because all of us can copy anything from anybody. We can make things on radionics machines. You can make things on paper remedies. So if we have the mentality of thinking that we have to keep it for ourselves, we have to keep it for ourselves, you are not going to get anywhere. And I have to say, the more I got to this point of just having this abundance mentality, the more it's come back. And that's what I just, the roundabout way of all of this is that all of us just need to realize that all our work is based on the work of somebody else. None of us have come up with any of this all by ourselves. We're all standing on the shoulders of giants. And so to break each other down or to think that we own some part of homeopathy is just crazy. But then at the same time, I'm going to throw something in there for you that I want you to answer and see if you've got any ideas, is people like Danica Appeline and Paul Cherio and Mikhail Yakir and Colin Griffith, who are creating these amazing new remedies that all of us are benefiting from. And there's so much work that goes into approving. I do feel there needs to be some sort of way of compensating them. Or do we just decide that's just your gift to homeopathy? Like feel that needs to be some sort of energy flow to all of this, right? So I'll just throw it out there and you make with that what you want.
Well, okay. I think, where do I start? No, I always go back to, where's it coming from? Where's the intention coming from? And I think if the intention, as I said at the beginning about CHE and the whole thing to enhance the health and well-being of humankind, it's the application and education of homeopathy. We do a lot of stuff that's free. So we do a lot of free webinars, because sometimes we get criticism, well, your courses are expensive. And I say, yeah, but we've got a lot of free stuff out there. We have a charitable thing in Gambia where we're training people but if you want to pay, then if you want to do a practitioner, then you have to pay for it, because this is, there's the expenses and all the costs that are associated with that. So I always think it's where you come from or the place you're coming from, because that quote, and I love this quote, we don't see how things are, we see things as we are. So you can see something that something's been taken away from you, or you can see something that actually, wow, that person it respects this or what I do and is now taking it out into the world. And when you were talking, I always remember, this came back to Robin Murphy. God, this is a long time ago. This is like 20 years, odd years ago. And I was in a car, we were driving from London to Bath, and we're just chatting away. And I said to him, Robin, because I was very protective of him and his work, because he put so much work in, and people would rip his work off and make it that it was their own. And I'm not going to name names. It was one particular person that had done this and was going out doing webinars, doing seminars on some of the work that Robin had done. And I said to him, this is not right. It's like people taking all that work you put in. And his answer, and this maybe is present here today because I can hear his voice, it was saying, that's great. He said, because the world now will know, more people will know about it. The work that I do, I want the world to know. So that was his take. People, I used to get so frustrated with him, because I know people that would get his CDs and then burn them off and then sell them to other people. And I took it so personally for him. And I'd get on the phone to him and say, Robin, look, I sold them the whole course. And I said, yeah, but Robin, they're doing this. And it's fine. At least the information's out there. At least it's going out there, you know? So that's my answer, really. I think it really depends where you're coming from. And he felt that he got that. His prime thing was to get that information. He lived and breathed that. So I think, you know, it's back to that. It's back to where you're coming from, a generosity of spirit. And unfortunately, just like life in general, and homeopathy is no different. There's politics, there's infighting. I mean, homeopathy is renowned for infighting over the past 200 years.
Why?
But I think people are people, and it's not the way that I want to live my life. But I think that too much energy, God, to be wasted fighting. It really is. So, but I do think people should be acknowledged. So back to that point about being acknowledged. Yeah. I think people should be acknowledged and acknowledge the sources. That's, I think, really important. And in fact, if you ever see Hillary do anything, you know, she does a PowerPoint presentation, she's always acknowledging where she's getting her information from. So I think that, you know, I think that should be done. That you know, if you've got some information or a protocol or something, like, I think you should always acknowledge it.
I
don't know if that answers your question. That's my opinion, really.
Yeah, it does. Part of it, the other part is approvings, but I feel like that's like a discussion. We need to get a panel of people.
Yeah, well, the proving,
how can we make that happen? But
Yeah, go on.
No, I was just going to say, with the homeopathic immunization stuff, I mean, Isaac Golden is the number one guy for that. And so when I wanted to put together a course to teach my mums about homeopathic immunization, I contacted him and I said, this is what I want to do. Do you mind if I do it? This is all based on your work. And, you know, not only did he say, yep, that's totally fine, go for it. He also sent me a PDF, which he sends to every homeopath with all the everything like laid out, and you can customize it for you. I mean, that is like for me the ultimate in abundance mentality. Like he just gave it away, but it is a fine balance, right? Because we don't, as homeopaths, a lot of us do give a lot away, and we actually don't know when we should take some for ourselves.
Well,
as well.
So but that's up to us. That's our personal responsibility.
True.
As homeopaths, in fact, I had this conversation with Declan. We're the worst at giving ourselves and not having boundaries, and but especially of ourselves when people to our clients and to our patients. So we can be the worst. We're extremely carcinogenic in that respect.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think that when you talk, I mean, there is a fine line, but you know that line. You know, you know that line. Well, you should know that line. As practitioners, we should all be in a self-reflective process constantly and working on ourselves. And, you know, we never stay still, do we? Because when you stay still, you get stagnant. And that, unfortunately, I think that's what happens with a lot of practitioners. They become stagnant. We've got to constantly be growing. We've got to be constantly looking at ourselves, not just for ourselves, but also for our patients and our clients. I always say you can only take people as far as you're at. You can't take them any further. So if we're constantly in a self-reflective process, then hopefully some of this stuff, you would go, actually, no, this doesn't feel right. Or actually, no, this does feel right. You know, I mean, you said that about giving away free. I mean, I do a homescriber like presentation. And I gave it away. I gave it to a lot of people the other day, students, the group, and said, look, yeah, take it, make it your own. I'm not holding on to it. Like I said, because if you think you own the knowledge and if you think you own the wisdom, then you've lost it. You've lost it because it will be taken. It's like it's taken away, isn't it? Or you get into these conflicts. And back to the provings, yes, it's a conversation itself, but I think as a profession, we owe that to the profession. Provings is the bedrock of what we do. As in homeopathy, isn't it? It's where we get our information.
Danitza made a good point, though. Like, if you think of it, the pharmaceutical industry, when they, you know, prove a new drug, the people get paid to go and test that out. The people that take the drug, they get lots of money for that. And there is so much work that goes into that, because we're actually thinking of doing a new proving off the emu feather. And I don't know, but the emu feather is the only feather in the world that has a split, whatever the middle part is. And I said to Sally the other day, yeah, let's do it. And I'm like, I just don't want to do any other write-up. Like, you can do all that. Like, I'll do the proving. But the work that goes in after that, it's just so many
hours.
It's
phenomenal.
It's huge.
Phenomenal.
And you can't see clients in that time. It's like hours.
But then you've got to look at it, Eugene, and I get that. And if people are too busy, then they can't get involved in it.
Okay.
It's the people, there's a lot of people with a lot of time, with a lot of expertise that can do it. So yes, there's a lot, but they're talking about those people, those payments. I remember when this is before going to homeopathy, I was about 18, 19, a drug company was doing these trials, and some of my friends did them. You get paid a lot of money, £2,000 to stay in this place. But God knows what you're taking. And remember, you're signing a waiver form. No wonder you should be paid. Anything could happen. So I think it's slightly different. And also the pharmaceutical industry, as I always say, they're not in the wellness business, they're in the sickness business, but they're trying to create products which are going to sell often for billions. Some don't ever make it. But you know, it's a cost benefit. They know what they're doing around that. So I don't think you can make the I don't personally think you can make the comparison to the pharmaceutical industry, because it's a completely different, not just a completely different thing, but a completely different model. And I think that I've always had this in my practice. I have a 10% tithe. Anything in my, and I did this from day one, anything I do, 10% is for free. Now I choose what that can be. It could be a hospital visit, it could be somewhere I know can't afford it, or whatever it is, or give them my time and advice for free. And I think that's important. I think so I had it with somebody yesterday, and I gave them some advice, and I was on the call for an hour, and I said, how much are we? I said, no, this is fine, this is for you. I'm going to give this for you. And but I don't always do that. It depends on the situation. So I don't think we need to worry about it. As far as, I just think it comes back to us. We have got to be, it's very individual, and we have to use our own North Star of what are we doing. We've got to be conscious of everything we do, I think. And I don't know if that answered the question, but answers your question. I'll give you an opinion.
It does, yeah. As I've been going on my own journey, and somebody said to me the other day in our little podcast Facebook group that they said, you must be a completely different person now to when you start the podcast. And I can truly say that I am. Like, I've learned so much through all our amazing guests. And yeah, just it's been such an incredible experience. And that's, yeah, it's been interesting. As I'm finding myself more embracing the fact that scarcity is just all, it's all just in our head, and there is abundance, there's more than enough for everyone. And I've just had some beautiful connections that's happened because of that, like some fellow homeopaths who I sell kits, and they also sell kits. And so technically we'd be competition, but just putting that aside and working together, and we've been sharing each other on each other's stories and recommending each other, and just like, just, it's been such a beautiful flow. And other people have recognized that we are cheering each other on, which has been really great, because I had a comment from a student the other day. Oh, it seems like there's so much infighting in homeopathy, and it's so nice to see that we're all ladies. Sorry, I'm sure just so happens that we're all a bunch of ladies, that you ladies are really lifting each other up and supporting each other. And even though you're technically in competition, there's none of that. And all of you are just cheering each other on. And I was like, I really hope that this is the new paradigm, that we realize there's enough for everyone, and that we're all just here for, there is going to be so much, or there is already, but just going to be more and more and more work for all of us, even though there's going to be all these new thousands of homeopaths. But there's, the world is in a health crisis. It needs all of us. And I'm a baby when it comes to astrology, but it's apparently the age of Aquarius, and this is apparently the age where all of this is going to unfurl and happen and raise our vibration. And
well, it's about
it's
about community, and it's about, you know, I'm the same, you know, it's having, I remember once we got a letter because it was quite a long time ago, from a group of homeopaths in Brighton who said, can we stop training people who live in Brighton? Because there's enough homeopaths in Brighton.
Oh, wow.
And I replied back to them and said, look, there's a market every Sunday in London called on Columbia Road, and they sell flowers, right? They sell flowers on this road. So every Sunday morning, people want to buy flowers, they go to Columbia Road. So why do you go to Columbia Road on the Sunday morning? Because that's where all the flower sellers are.
Yeah.
So the more that we are together, the more that, like you said, working together, collaborating, coming from that place of generosity of spirit, there is enough to go around. I was brought up with a poverty consciousness as a kid. I was like one of seven kids. They were always told there's never enough to go around, blah, 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 blah. And I had to fundamentally change that when I went into homeopathic practice, because I was still had that same poverty consciousness of lack, very soric, that lack. But I know it's when you have an abundance mindset, and you're absolutely right, it's an abundance mindset, that when you see things in that way, that there is enough to go around, that there's more than enough. There's more enough clients and patients that we could even deal with in the world. Then I think, life's a lot better. Life's a lot easier and a lot better when you think of that way, I think. And collaboration is absolutely key with each other. We're all walking a path. And look, we're not that many compared to the world population. We presume everybody knows about homeopathy, but you go out in the street and ask 10 people what homeopathy is, and they'll have a vague idea. So we've got to get out of this thing that everybody thinks we know, that everybody knows what homeopathy is. So I thought that the negativity around, you know, skeptics in homeopathy. Now, you could see that as a terrible thing. And I know homeopaths taking the websites down because they don't want to be attacked, whereas I see them as confused supporters. You know, that's it. You know, it's just a change of a mindset, because if they really knew what homeopathy was, because they don't, if they did, they would be supportive of it. So, yeah, it is very interesting.
Tell you a funny story. So I went to a local homeopaths meeting recently. And it's fine, I can say, because the people who said it, I know, don't listen to the podcast. And if they do, they didn't admit it at the time. But a few years ago, we arrived in Perth 7 years ago, so I didn't know anybody. I had to start my clinic from scratch. So I was in local Facebook groups giving a lot of free advice to local mums and doing a lot of free homeopathy at home talks to just say, hi, I'm here from New Zealand, don't know anyone.
Yeah.
And I got a call from our local HA. I wasn't even registered with them, but they called me and they said, you can't You're not allowed to give free advice on Facebook groups. It's going to get us in trouble. And you can't do this and this on your website. And you can't do this and this and this. And it was really traumatic for me because I was still quite new here. And it was such a bad experience that I then completely just, I changed, you know, every dark cloud has a silver lining. It was one of those things because then I ended up just starting my own little group. And then I was just giving advice in there and everything turned out really, really great. And it's been really wonderful. But then funny enough, on Sunday, I went to this meeting and I don't normally go to these because all these women that gave me a really hard time, and I knew they were going to be there, but I felt a little bit stronger myself. Yeah. So I went along to it. And one of them, I was just chatting with them and they said, oh yeah, they've been in practice for like 20 years and they've always struggled. But the last year, things have really picked up for them for the first time. And then one of the other homeopaths who's on my team, she said to them, yeah, it's because of Eugenie's podcast. And I just pissed myself laughing. I thought it was so funny. But these were the people that were just keeping things really small and just so scared to say anything. And I haven't spoken about this on the podcast before, but I have had a call from the TGA, which is the Therapeutic Goods Association here in Australia. And the health department has once turned up at my clinic, which I just about shat myself. And that was because we were selling the COVID vaccine remedies. So they found it was stopped at a border somewhere. And because it said Pfizer vaccine, 30C homeopathic remedy on it, they were like, oh, you can't do this. You can't say that. And I totally get that. That was my stuff up. I just did not think about that. I didn't think because, you know, we put the name of what the remedy is made from on there, but obviously have gotten much smarter and I'm using codes ever since. And any other homeopath listening, make sure that you're using codes and not actually if it's a trade name or anything like that, don't put that on there. And then straight after it happened, I called another homeopath and she said, yep, they were just at my place after they were at yours. So there was definitely a bit of a stint happening here in Australia. And I was quite scared after that. But anyway, where I was going with this is we have to be brave despite the fact that for the past 200 odd years, homeopathy has had resistance this entire time. There's always been organizations trying to shut us down. But we have to be brave because now is the time to stand up and don't be small. Be brave, be bold, be big. Get your message out there because the world really needs homeopathy. And you playing small is not serving anyone. Because one of the other ladies who at the time was telling me, you know, keep quiet, you're causing trouble for all of us. She is now going to stop being a homeopath because she's just not having enough clients. So why do you want to study all these years, spend all this money, put your heart and soul into it and then keep quiet? So I do think we need to grow a pair of balls and
totally
be brave.
I've had my fair share of skeptics and been attacked in the national newspapers and all different organizations over the 26 years, but I don't really care. I say why I don't care because I've been practicing for so long. When you get attacked in that way and saying homeopathy is this and it's that and it's placebo and it's all that, and it's like saying the sky's green. It's like, what are you talking about? It doesn't even make sense to me when you say that homeopathy is this and this. But it is about having courage. And remember, courage is not the absence of fear. You know, it's actually doing it anyway. And
despite of the fear.
Despite the fear, we've talked about this before, I think, with trolling or social media, you will get attacked or whatever you do. You can put something, like I said, like your dog and a nice picture of your dog online and people say, oh, it's a lovely dog, how lovely. And other people go, oh, it's a horrible dog. It's like you. You're horrible, or whatever. It's like people, you're going to get that. You're going to get the haters or whatever. But the homeopathic skepticism was very, well, especially in the UK, was very organized and it was incredibly organized, actually. And so a lot of homeopaths in the UK, they were afraid. They were afraid. But at the end of the day, we have to stand up, I believe, into what we do. And like you said, homeopathy has always been like that. Hanuman was... You mentioned it. He had that original energy.
He was
chased from town to town. It's not like that. It's not like that at all. But we've just got to be, we've just got to show courage and we just got to do what we do because it's our patients, our clients. So for every negative thing I've been wrote about me in the press and CHE, we've had people say, well, it's publicity. Big, oh, I didn't know he existed. So you get, there's always a double-edged thing. But yes, we cannot be small anymore. We are in the golden age of homeopathy. People are demanding it. What's happened the past 4 years? This is our time. This is homeopathy's time. A lot of homeopaths say this, but it's true. But we've got to have, but I think as a homeopath, you have to get clinical experience. Otherwise, it is still an idea for you. If you haven't got that clinical experience, and that's because remember, it's about certainty. When you've got clinical experience of what homeopathy can do, then you have certainty. Mm. And when you have certainty, people feel that. People pick up on the uncertainty. And there's, I think it's quite complex because people, if you've got an issue about being validated or by the world or your loved ones, because I mean, listen, our loved ones can be the worst around attacking homeopathy. But at the end of the day, it's about, again, it goes back to where we sit. We don't see how things are. We see things as we are. Mm. So, you know, you can see being attacked and whatever as a positive, or you can see it as a negative. It's entirely, you know, if it's been attacked, we're doing something right when people are coming after us.
Well, I was stupid, so I definitely did something wrong. But I tell you what I have said over and over, and this is the first time I've talked about it on the podcast, and I don't know, I might edit it out still.
Show courage.
Yeah, so I completely believe I drew that to myself because I have definitely got there's a fear of persecution. I don't know if I was a witch at the stake in a past life, but I almost expect to get into trouble. Like, I know maybe it's trauma from childhood or something like that, but I kept on waiting to get in trouble. I kept on thinking I'm going to get in trouble. And then it happened. And after it happened, it actually was not as bad an experience. The guy at the TGA was actually really lovely. And he said to me, look, if you ever have any issues with labeling, if you're ever unsure of something, just send me an email. And the best part, the two staff from the health department had turned up at our clinic who came to try and confiscate our stock. And I said to her, here it is. And she's like, oh, but it's got a different label. And I said, oh, yeah. After the TGA guy called me, we changed the label straight away. And she's like, oh, that's not a problem then. You can keep it. And I'm like, oh, thanks. So we chatted with them and we said, look, we're actually giving these remedies to people who are getting the COVID vaccination because we want to not have them not have side effects and issues like that. And both of them told me, because they were one of the first to get vaccinated when their vaccines came out because they worked for the health department, both of them had vaccine reactions. And I said to them, look, just come and see me. I'll be so happy to help you. So that whole like experience, which my heart was like just beating so fast and I thought it was the end of the world, actually ended up turning into this really lovely experience of the guy at the TGA saying to me, it's okay, just we want to help you. If you've got any issues, just email us. And then these people in the health department going, yeah, actually we had really major vaccine reactions from this vaccine.
But it, but again, you
very
see,
interesting.
Yeah, so that's what I was saying. So some of these things that can seem negative, it can actually be positive. And I can tell you lots of examples of that where we did the premiere of Vax back in 2016 and we got thrown out of Regent's College with CHE, which we'd been there for 17 years because we showed a documentary. But however, we ended up in Bloomsbury Square, which we've been ever since, and it's a much more better location. There's always, like you said, a silver lining. But I think it's also, though, just picking up on what you said then about what happened with those people, that was also about you. So you had that experience, but you turned the experience round. You weren't confrontational. You were cooperative in a good way, proactively, not in a submissive way. Mm. And again, then they told you, oh, I've actually had a side effect from this and I don't like that, which is a big thing for them to say. But they must have felt, again, certain with you. So your certainty with homeopathy, I think, really comes across. And that's why the podcast is great and successful, and you're a successful practitioner. Because I've mentored a lot of homeopaths over the years and coached them around practice burnout. And 99.9 times out of 10, it's about mindset. But it's that certainty. Same with clients. It's the same with people want certainty or feel your certainty about what you're doing. Very powerful. It's incredibly powerful. Again, all the great teachers have certainty. They're not uncertain, they're certain. They know. There's so no like
internally
gray area
as well. Hey, like just coming.
No, yeah, it's just innate within them. They have it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that comes from clinical experience and lots of practice. You see a musician doing it. It's like the certainty there, you know, what they do. Mm-hmm. It's powerful. It's incredibly powerful.
Oh, actually, is there anything else that you want to say before we wrap up, Marcus? I know you've got a whole lot on your plate.
No, not at all. No, just thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk. And we always think, what are we going to talk about?
That's why I didn't worry. I will quickly add one thing. Homeopathy Awareness Week is the 10th to the 16th of April every year, where we celebrate Hahnemann's birthday. That was on the 10th of April. I hope CHE has got something lined up to celebrate Homeopathy Awareness Week.
Absolutely.
I won't jump it on you right now, but hopefully. And also for those listeners, I'm doing a speak pipe recordings again. So if you go back to the 10th to the 16th of April in 2022 and 2023, I did daily episodes, which were testimonials from clients all around the world. And this year we're doing it again. If you go to speakpipe.com/homeopathy hangout, you just press the record button on your laptop or your phone. You don't need any special software and you just record your testimonial of how homeopathy has helped you. And we're going to do some episodes. So hopefully everyone at CHE can record some messages for us as well. And then the other thing, I don't know if you know this, but you can, from the 19th till the 22nd of April, there will be a private screening of Kim Aaliyah's movie, Inspiring Homeopathy.
Oh, yes.
So people can buy tickets for $25 to watch online from the 19th till the 22nd of April. And so we're encouraging everyone to have parties, get all your friends together, everybody buy a ticket, come together, get the popcorn, you know, get the lazy boy chairs and go watch the movie together.
Fantastic. Well, it's thank you. Thanks for
so fun to chat with you, Marcus. I hope we can check it again soon.
Okay, thanks.